Welcome to this episode of the Feral Podcast. Coming up, we've got everything you need to know about the action-adventure video game Middle-Earth Shadow of Mordor Game of the Year Edition. I'm Brad Gibson, the PR manager at Feral Interactive. Joining us from our London development studios, as always, to explain more about Shadow of Mordor is Feral Interactive producer Edwin Smith. Let's get straight into this because there's a lot to cover with Shadow of Mordor. Let's begin by talking about the basics, Edwin. Shadow of Mordor is an action-adventure game that takes place between the events of The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. Take us into the premise and the story of this game.
So you play the character of Talion. You're a ranger of Gondor, which is in the Kingdom of Men from Middle-earth, if you've watched the Lord of the Rings films or read the books. You were responsible for guarding the Black Gate of Mordor, but you and your family were brutally killed, and you somehow, instead of dying, you find yourself trapped between one world and the next because you're bound with the elven wraith called Celebrimbor. Mm-hmm. And he imbues Talion with these wraith-like abilities. So the goal of the game and the goal of your character is to avenge both deaths, both yourself and of the wraith, and find out more about who murdered their loved ones. As you go fighting your way through the campaign, you discover a little bit more truth about your wraith's identity. You find a little bit more about the creation of the Rings of Power. So the story puts quite a heavy emphasis on the creeping rise to power of Sauron after his defeat in the War of the Last Alliance, which is the end of the Hobbit books, and the reclaiming of Mordor by his evil forces. So it kind of fills in that gap between the two books. So it's an area which was never told originally by Tolkien. So this game tries to take advantage of that to sort of add its own lore and story into the gap. And it's really quite fun because you don't really know what's going to happen because this has never been a documented area before. And it's a great adventure.
Now, in playing the game myself, here's the thing that I feel is really the premise of the whole game. You play the game in the role of Talion, bonded with a wraith, a Celebrimbor, and you're mainly concentrated on battles with your enemies. And the more enemies you've come up against, the harder they become. And for every enemy you fall to, or every enemy rival that you squabble with, they become stronger with power. Is that basically how the power struggle and the fight happens?
Yes, you utilize your skills both as a ranger, but you also use your powers of the wraith to defeat enemies, and you gain skill points. As you build up these experience and skill points, you can use them to unlock abilities. For example, defeating captains of war chiefs will give you experience, and they'll give you power points. Mm-hmm. So you can upgrade both your overall power, but you can also get, with the power points, you can unlock completely new tiers of abilities.
Now, what's unique about this game, which has received a lot of attention and praise, is the Nemesis system, which is really the backbone of this game. Explain how that works for us.
So the Orc society in the game is very brutal survival of the fittest. So they're constantly vying for superiority and fighting to increase their own rank within Sauron's army. Mm-hmm. So at the bottom of the pile, you've got your run-of-the-mill Orc soldiers. Leading these are captains. And these are identified in game, and they're slightly harder to beat, and their failures and successes are sort of tracked when you fight them. And then leading captains are the highest ranks, which are war chiefs. These are really strong and very powerful battle veterans. Now, they'll have more abilities and less weaknesses, but by the time you're going to be fighting war chiefs, you can also upgrade with epic runes and better weapons and better powers to defeat them. Now, the real key thing about the Nemesis system is this all happens organically. Normally, you have bad guys and sort of good guys and bosses, and they're always going to be the same. Whereas in this game, you can have a captain, and then he can then, let's say, get promoted to a war chief. Or you could even just have a lowly orc, and he gets promoted to a captain because a captain gets killed. And then he might get promoted again, and he can end up being a war chief. So the entire basis of the army you're fighting against is completely fluid. Added on top of that is the fact that with your wraith ability, you can actually take control of a captain or a war chief and get them under your power. And then you can use that to have those captains attack other captains or war chiefs in Sauron's army. So you essentially can slowly take over Sauron's army in its entirety over time without anyone knowing. And it's just such a unique and really cool way of having a gameplay work.
So you mentioned strengths and weakness points, which the player can exploit. Tell us what that includes.
Sure. To overcome captains and war chiefs, the player can gather some intel about them to discover their strengths and, crucially, weaknesses. You can find this information out in the environment, or you can actually grab one of their underlings and interrogate them. So, for example, if you have a war chief, you could actually interrogate one of their captains, and under interrogation, the captain might tell you a little snippet about the war chief that will be useful. So, for one example, maybe you're fighting a captain who's afraid of fire, or maybe a war chief can't be defeated by stealth tactics. There's a really long list of strong points and weak points a target can have depending on their level. It's up to you to look at not only their weaknesses but also their strengths and capitalize on their fears while not allowing them to use their strengths, using the environment to take them down. So every time you come up against a captain or a war chief, you'll probably have to change your strategy slightly because they all have different combinations of strengths and weaknesses.
Now, one of the great things about this game, I thought, compared to a lot of other games, is that the orcs have their own unique personalities and traits, and as their army develops, your enemies learn Talion's tactics, and they try and counteract those the next time they meet them once that they've healed, right?
That's right. Each and every captain and war chief expresses themselves in a unique way. So you might have a dim-witted slow speaker, a budding poet, a coward, a fearsome monster slayer, a scholar, a grog-loving drunk. They all have very unique ways of insulting Talion as well. So, for example, you might get told that, you know, I planted you in the ground once and I'll plant you again, because if you fought this captain before and he's killed you and smashed you into the ground, the next time you fight him, he'll remember that and he'll sort of taunt you with that knowledge. So that's one part of it. The other really cool part of it is the captains and the war chiefs actually remember the tactics you used, so that they can actually remember that, say, if you almost defeated them or badly injured them using long-range arrows, firing them into fires and causing the fire to explode, then maybe he'll be more wary about going near a fire. So it's a very dynamic system, so it gets away from some other older games, which you might mention, that have a very sort of set way of doing things. So all of the bad guys of a certain rank will act in a certain way. In this way, it's completely dynamic with the nemesis system, so every time you have a fight, it will affect the next fight.
Now, there's lots of different types of combat, and there's three main types of weapons. Talk to us about those frequently used types of attacks against opponents and the weapons you can use.
So a core part of what makes this a really sort of big, open, limitless world is the freedom for you to be able to fight however you see fit. So the combat will entirely depend on the playstyle you've chosen. For certain opponents, you'd be quite wise to employ a certain method of attack. But Talion's got three main weapons at his disposal to help out with your choice of selection. So you've got your sword. I'll try and say this correctly. They're called Orphael, which is sort of an all-out big, heavy battle sword. You've got your Wraith's bow, which is called Azkar, for a more accurate sort of long-range playstyle. So you can snipe orcs from long range, for example. And then you've got your dagger, which allows you to sort of have a stealthy playstyle where you can sneak up against, for example, if you're trying to kill a captain, you can sneak up against their bodyguards and quickly slit their throats when no one's looking. And then when you fight the captain, you don't have a whole bunch of orcs around him helping out.
Mm-hmm.
Again, one of the really cool things about Mordor, which this answered some of the things we've been talking about, is just what seems like almost limitless different ways you can play the game. They've really sort of spread out all of these weapons and stuff, so you can play with a flat out I'm just going to wade in gameplay style on the whole. You can play as a more stealthy kind of player where you sneak up behind people, or you can play in a more ranged method where you always stay a long way away from your opponents whenever possible, perhaps up on the top of sort of old broken down buildings and towers, and you basically can sit there and take people out with your bow, with sort of sniping them. So it really does fit into no matter what type of gameplay style you really enjoy, you can probably play Mordor in that kind of style.
And what sort of skills and abilities can Talion learn to utilize these weapons and these playstyles you just talked about?
So Talion can use his ranger abilities, which were his, or he can use the powers which were imbued in him by the Wraith. So the abilities are locked with what's called ability points, which are gained with experience. And different levels of ability are unlocked with power. So, for example, if you build up a bunch of experience, you can unlock everything on your current tier. And as you go up in strength, you have more options. So you can pick a specific type of skill, and then you can hone that skill as you get more powerful in the game. added to this is because you've got these very separate styles of things, you can start optimizing your abilities to work with your playstyle. So, for example, we have a couple of guys downstairs who really enjoy using the ranger abilities to help building up hit streaks so that you can build up a combo when you're facing your enemies head on. And it's a real sort of close one-on-one melee style, whereas a few of the other guys go and upgrade some of their wraith skills with the bow so that they can sit on the top of a building at a fair old range and just slowly take people out with headshots mm-hmm. because they've optimized their abilities that way. Mm-hmm. So it really allows a lot of replayability of this game, because you can replay through the game with very varied styles and abilities depending on how you want to play. So even if you've played through once with a very sort of brutal tactic, you can decide to play through again playing as a stealth kind of style. So it really, really does add to the replayability. Not only the fun the first time, but it's just as much fun the fifth time, which I think is a really important thing with games.
Right. Now explain to our listeners the various versions of Shadow of Mordor for Mac. You got the Steam version, the Mac App Store version, and tell us the main differences in those features.
So we have two different ways you can buy the game. You can buy it on the Mac App Store, or you can buy it as a Steam key, either via the Steam application or from various third-party stores, including our own. So on both, you can buy a version called Game of the Year. This is the base game and all of the additional content which has been added into the game, all combined into one pack. On Steam, we're also selling the game and all of that downloadable content separately. So you can buy just the base game, and then you can perhaps, if you would like to, upgrade and buy all of the added missions and added runes and added features which are available through the DLC. Apart from that, the only real difference between them is the online leaderboards and other online features are tied to your user account. So on Steam, you'll be able to see the leaderboards for all of your Steam friends, not only on the Mac, but also on Linux and on Windows. Whereas on the Mac App Store, you'll see a list of leaderboards for all of your Mac App Store friends. So apart from that, all of the features are the same. So a little bit of difference there with the leaderboard. So if you've got a few more friends who play on the Mac App Store, then you might want to buy the Mac App Store version. If you've got a few more friends on Steam and you want to compare leaderboards and stuff, then you might want to play the Steam version. But in terms of once you're in the Game of the Year versions have all the same features.
All right. Tell us about the retail pricing for Shadow of Mordor.
So on the Mac App Store, the Shadow of Mordor Game of the Year will sell for $49.99 in North America, $29.99 in the UK, including VAT, and $49.99 including tax in euros throughout Europe. Prices will vary very slightly through various online stores, depending on exchange rates at the time and stuff, but it'll be within those margins.
And let's talk about the minimum system requirements for Shadow of Mordor. We've got the Mac version and the Linux version, and then we've got to talk about drivers and graphics cards as well. So go into that if you would.
On the Mac version, you'll need 65 gigabytes of spare hard drive space. You'll need to be running OS 10 Mavericks 10.10.3, which is the latest version of the OS right now, and you'll need a graphics card with a gigabyte of video RAM. Now you'll need an AMD 5000 series or better, an Nvidia 6000 series or better, or an Intel Iris Pro or better. This game's pretty graphically intense, so you will be needing a pretty powerful hardware. Now on Linux, it's vastly the same. You'll need 65 gigabyte hard drive space. You'll need the latest version of SteamOS or Ubuntu 14.04. You'll need a Nvidia 6000 series graphics card or better, and you'll need to be using the 346.35 closed source drivers or better. I mention that specifically because there are many different versions of drivers on Linux, and you will be needing those specific drivers or better, because the previous drivers don't have the features and support which are needed for this game. Now, we don't support Intel graphics cards at the moment. Unfortunately, the open source Mesa drivers don't have the features that are required to get this game to work. This game is using OpenGL 4, and it's using some of the latest features of OpenGL 4, so Intel don't support them at the moment. Once their drivers do, then we'll look to enable support for Intel graphics cards. Now, AMD graphics is another point which I just need to touch upon. Unfortunately, at the moment, we can't support AMD on launch. Even with the latest closed source drivers, there's a number of stability issues that we cannot work around at the moment. However, we are actively working with AMD to be able to support Shadow of Mordor. However, at the moment, we don't support it. And if you do try and play, you will probably have some stability issues with the game pausing or potentially crashing on your cards. And the final point, which I know quite a few of our Linux listeners have asked a few times is whether or not we support any of the open source drivers. I touched upon it with the Intel ones. Unfortunately, we don't support any of the open source drivers right now. And the reason for that is the open source drivers only support OpenGL 3 right now. And you need OpenGL 4 and actually 4.3 full support. So again, sometime in the future, as the open source drivers improve and get all of these features, then it's quite likely that the game will be able to run on them. Right now, those features are missing, so we just can't get the game to work without them.
All right, now let's answer some questions from Feral customers who have posed questions about Shadow of Mordor via social media. And we've got some great questions. Let's dive right in. And the first one comes from Caleb Hall, who wants to know what people mean when they say Shadow of Mordor is open world.
What's meant by open world is Shadow of Mordor invites you to explore and sort of take your time and select activities you're most drawn to. So the world you're in is huge. A couple of examples is Mordor's a mountainous realm which is split into two main regions. So you've got the dark, volcanic, rocky northwestern Mordor, and then you've got the other side, which is a lot more sort of beautiful looking. Both of these are roughly the size of the levels in Batman Arkham City, which you might have played. So this is almost double or triple that size. So you've got a lot of spaces to run around in. And the key thing is you can be running around in these levels without actually having a mission running straight away. So what you can do is you can run around and see various missions and things to do. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of pick your way around and decide, I'm going to do a little bit of this. So although you're following a story path throughout the game, you can branch off and go and do side missions and investigate little areas and then come back to the story. So that's kind of what open world means, is you're not following a straight path from A to B to C.
Right.
Everything's presented in front of you, and it's up to you when you do things. There are a few things within missions where you have to do stuff in a set order, but in general, you can run around, you can explore wherever you want, you can choose which missions you want to do next. Everything's sort of up to you. The choice is open, hence the term open world.
All right, and next up is Jeff Denham with the question, Shadow of Mordor is a great-looking game, so how is it optimized for Mac and Linux?
This is a really great question. We've had a few guys ask this one before. Basically, what we try and do is we try and make sure that our games, when we're bringing them to Mac and Linux, that we optimize the game for the Mac platform and we optimize the game for the Linux platform. What we do is we have a look at what strengths and weaknesses both platforms have, utilize those strengths, and try and avoid the weaknesses. So we don't try and make one game that runs on both. We try and make a game that runs the best it possibly can on Linux and the game which can run the best that possibly it can on the Mac. For the end user, it looks exactly the same. You can't tell. But under the hood, we might be using different libraries and techniques and systems. So, for example, I briefly touched upon it in the specifications when we're talking about the min spec for this game. Linux, we're using OpenGL 4.3. That doesn't exist on Mac. Macs only have got OpenGL 4.1. So that's something where we used all of those additional features on the Linux version to use the compute shaders on that, whereas on the Mac, we went a different path and used some features which aren't available on Linux. So it's all give and take, but the general premise I want to get across is we don't just port a game to Mac and Linux. We port the best game possible for the Mac and the best game possible for Linux. So each of them get treated as very sort of separate items in terms of deciding what will make it work as good as possible on that platform. So we love our Mac audience. We've loved you for years. And the same thing with our Linux audience. We try and make the best game for you, not the best game that works on both.
And our final question is from George Ford, who asks us, is Shadow of Mordor true to Tolkien mythology?
So this is a very tough question, so forgive me before I get hate mail from different fandoms. But what I would say is it takes all of Tolkien's established lore and all of his different books, which he wrote, not just the Lord of the Rings, but Silmarillion and things like that, and it kind of builds on top of that. So sometimes it does break canon by adding some new fascinating characters. Celebrimbor, especially the Wraith, he technically was never mentioned in any of the books. But it does it in such a self-contained way that it doesn't change any events or histories that actually happened in the book. So it's kind of, let's say it's trying to add to Tolkien's lore.
Right.
It isn't trying to reinvent the wheel or change Tolkien's lore. So I think it's done in a very, very respectful way. And I think it actually helps add to the overall lore around sort of Lord of the Rings and Middle Earth.
So it complements it, basically.
Yes, I think it complements it and does it with the greatest amount of respect, which I think is something you need to do with such a great piece of work as the Middle Earth and Lord of the Rings.
All right, so some great questions from Feral users. Thanks so much for all of those who sent them in. We hope we've been able to help you better understand a great game, and we hope you'll go online and purchase Middle-Earth Shadow of Mordor Game of the Year Edition. Edwin, thanks so much for joining us and explaining Shadow of Mordor.
And thank you, Brad.
And that's our podcast preview of Middle-Earth Shadow of Mordor Game of the Year Edition. Thanks for listening.